This is episode number 12 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mentoring Developers. I'm super excited to bring to you Tracy Lee. Tracy is an amazing person because she is an entrepreneur. She has started companies. She is a CEO of a company called Dishcrawl, and she's started and helped build 7+ companies in the last 12 years. She has a marketing background from San Jose State University. She is well-versed in building companies from the ground up. She knows social media marketing, growth hacking for companies at various stages. She's a fantastic and accomplished person. So what caused her to get into programming? She started to learn programming, not just any old programming environment or IDE or integrated development environment-based programming like Visual Basic or something drag and drop. She has decided to learn a framework, a JavaScript framework called Ember, which I am familiar with. And I met her at a conference that the Ember.js community puts out called EmberConf. And she stood out. She is an amazing person to have as a newbie developer. So I think it will be good for all of us to listen to her story, to learn from her what motivates her and the difficulties and troubles that she has encountered and how she's got out of it. And she is in love with Tomster, which is the Ember.js mascot. So we're going to talk about that. She has been passing out a lot of those Tomster stickers over the last few months. So without any further delays, let's get into my interview with Tracy Lee. So in this exciting episode of Mentoring Developers, we'll be talking to Tracy Lee. Tracy, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And I remember our first meeting at EmberConf in Portland, Oregon. I was going to say Portland, Maine, and then I almost choked myself. No. So we met and you were this, you know, bubbly person. You're taking pictures and you were, you know, so happy, so excited. So, you know, at EmberConf, which is a very sophisticated conference for Ember developers, Ember.js. This is a JavaScript framework. It's not for the faint of heart. And it turns out that at that time, you were not a programmer. You probably never coded before at that time. That was in March 2015. So is that a fair assessment that you hadn't really coded at that time?
Yeah, you know, it was really funny because a year and a half ago, I learned about Tomster. I just saw Tomster on a shirt and I got excited about this cute little thing. Then I ended up going to EmberConf and I was not a developer, but I had made friends in the community. And then in May, it was actually May 4th, 2015, I decided that I had a little bit of time from the businesses I had and decided to start coding. So I took a 2-week HTML, CSS, JavaScript course and then said, okay, just get me on Ember. So within 2 weeks of me learning any level of code, I got on Ember.
within 2 weeks of your first exposure to programming, you are now a certified, bona fide Ember developer of all possible things you could do. Why did you pick Ember? Because of Tomster? Tomster is that mascot, right? So you saw a picture of the little Tomster mascot for Ember?
Yeah, I found out about Tomster, and then I found out there were all these community Tomsters. So the first Tomster I met at versus, you know, the regular Tomster, and then I found out about Ember London Tomster, and then I found out there were more, and I just like fell in love with Tomster and just wanted to be a part of Tomster, whatever. And I started collecting them. And so now people send me Tomsters, and then I send them other Tomsters from everywhere. And it's, you know, it's a fun, like, little side project. But more excitingly, I think that helped me sort of get excited about the community and really got me excited about learning Ember and JavaScript. And I never actually realized how much I would fall in love with coding. And, you know, I'm mostly in marketing and sales, so I do a lot of that during the day, but I really wish I just had 12 hours a day to just code, because that's sort of my side project.
That is incredible for someone that, I mean, you have never done this before, but you just discovered it, and now that's all you want to do. This is quite incredible. I'm speechless.
Well, it's so much fun, right? It's I feel like, you know, when you're really good at something. I mean, I'm really great at what I do, you know, starting businesses, etc. But I think JavaScript and learning about different things is much more challenging. So it's really gratifying, right? Even if I'm still a beginner.
And you're not just a regular newbie, but you are somebody that has done a lot. You, and I looked at your profile, your bio. I looked at the website where you're listed as the CEO of Dishcrawl, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you are definitely involved. So before we get more into, you know, why you did this and how you got into programming, and we can talk more about your experiences, I want people to get a sense of who you are. So how would you describe yourself?
Quick bio. So I've been a serial entrepreneur for about 12 years now. I've been doing tech industry for about 8 years, tech startups. And I really love building community, being part of communities. I just joined the board of Hacker Dojo, which is a local hackerspace in Mountain View. And I organize Modern Web UI, which is a really cool meetup focused on exploring next generation standards, frameworks, tools, and techniques. So we have a lot of videos online talking about ES 2015, having a bunch of different core team members from React, Angular, and Ember. And then I do a lot of stuff just with entrepreneurs and investors. So I also started Venture Hacked and do a lot of writing there. But really sort of what launched me into the tech startup industry was my company I started 7 years ago called Dishcrawl. And, you know, it's all about food experiences. So we launched and we grew into 250 cities in over a little over a year and a half. And it was amazing. And, you know, all across the U.S. and Canada, you can find really cool food adventures to go on. So, yeah, that's a little bit about myself. But I honestly, these days, I just, you know, pray and hope for those days I have 8 to 12 hours to play around, poking around at Ember. And I spend a lot of my time at the gym, actually. I spend time on the elliptical, but my new favorite thing to do is watch Ember videos online. Watch people live code things while I'm working out.
I couldn't do it. And we were talking before we started recording, and I can't imagine doing that, because I'm, you know, it's hard to keep up without doing something so strenuous as exercise. But, you know, it's incredible that you're so passionate about it. And I was counting all the things that you're doing. It looks like you're doing four different things. And I'm doing a few things myself, and I'm dying out here. It's killing me. Mm-hmm. So what get a picture of how you're able to do all things. Obviously, you're not doing all of them full time, clearly not. Mm-hmm. And probably some of them you're only doing a few hours a week, and some of them are volunteer positions, right? You're not getting paid mm-hmm. for all of them. So are you making money from any of these things you're doing, or how, or you're just a hobbyist?
Well, some things I make money from. I mean, my main businesses I make money from. I do a lot of sales and marketing. I do a lot of consulting right now. And obviously I have my business. And then, you know, some things like hosting the Modern Web UI meetup or being on the board of Hacker Dojo is sort of a volunteer thing. So, but I believe in community. I mean, I'm really passionate about it.
It's true. You know. It's totally altruistic. There's, I mean, obviously it gives you some exposure. People get to know you, and that probably helps your consulting business. That probably, you know, I got to know you because you were at EmberConf. You were not an Ember developer at that time, but lots of people got to know you. You got to know people, and that helps you in your sales
yeah.
career.
Well, I don't think it really, not really. This is more of like a friend thing. Like I feel like the JavaScript community and the Ember community is more of a, you know, side project. That's basically my life. So I feel like that's my social life. And then business is my business life, you know, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that's interesting. So when did you encounter programming? I know that you said something around May. You started playing around with JavaScript, and you said that you took a course, and then after that, you just jumped into Ember. I mean, wasn't that hard?
No, actually, it's really, really easy. So, I mean, one thing is I'm really blessed with having amazing people around me, and the community has been really welcoming and open. So, to get set up or to ask the hard questions, it was much, much easier for me, right? And I think that actually with Ember CLI, it's so easy. You know, Ember new, name the project. Ember G route, done. You know, like it's not, I feel like with Ember, so it's funny because I don't have a software development background, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm giving a talk actually at the Global Ember Meetup next weekend. And I've been thinking about, okay, you know, I'm doing this the right way, but I don't know what the wrong way is because I was taught how to do it the right way first. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of the things that I think I take for granted that, let's say, Ember CLI does for me or, you know, how Ember projects are set up, I've never had to, you know, open up a project and look at a ton of spaghetti code, right? I mainly, you know, I really love the concept of the convention over configuration that Ember has. And again, with the CLI, you don't really have to think about it. You know, you just Ember G route, Ember G component. So
happy path programming. I think that's a term I'd like to use. It's really good. And Ember CLI, the generators that it has is very good. It's as good as the Rails CLI. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, something or some other CLIs that we have available, and that makes it very simple. But obviously, with a front-end framework like Ember, it's not really that simple. Because with a back-end framework like Rails, what you get is you get connectivity all the way to the database. And with Ember, you still have to think about other things besides your Ember application. Obviously, I'm not sure if you got too deep into this, but you're probably using Firebase. From my guess is that you're probably using Firebase as your data store. That way you don't have to worry about a backend,
right?
So yeah, and I had some trouble with that, but this is not an Ember podcast, so I want to talk about your experiences. So you did not study computer programming at all in a formal environment. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I literally just took those two classes and then have sort of been doing my own training and having people help me.
Yeah, well, that's the key part. You have people help you. I know that you have people that can answer some questions that some other person might say, well, you know, this is too silly, too basic. And if I ask somebody, they're going to say, did you read the guides? Did you, you know, get a book? You know, people's time has value in it. So I can't just go and ask somebody who has, you know, a lot of experience in a certain technology and say, hey, can you show me this? But I know that in the Ember community and some other communities like Rails, it's not that hard to do. People are generally forthcoming. And even if you're a first timer, they'll come out and they'll help you out. So the lesson that we can learn as I'm not a new developer, but if I were, the lesson that I would learn from this is that I shouldn't be afraid to ask. And I shouldn't take it too personally if I don't get the right answer or if they tell me to look up the docs or go ask on Stack Overflow. Right. Because, you know, people sometimes they have a bad day, whatever. But there will be a certain number of people in every community that will be happy to help.
What I found most useful is the Slack channel. So I think with new developers, right, you're thinking, oh, I'm not good enough to talk to these people, or, oh, how do I find this? Or they don't realize that, you know, asking somebody is really the best way to go about it. So I think it's about taking the time to make friends or taking the time to be useful in general, right? I mean, as a new developer, you know, each framework, at least I know for Angular and Ember, and I believe React as well, they have contribution guidelines. So, you know, what are things that new developers can do to contribute right away and be helpful to people so that other people are willing to return the favor?
And that's a very good point, because in a lot of these communities, especially in the Ember community, they really value contribution. Open source works on contributions. But the problem that somebody will have is, well, you know, I can't contribute because I hardly know anything. You know, that's gonna play in your mind a little bit. So how do you get around that? Have you tried to contribute something?
So I've done mild contributions to different I messed around with some documentation on Ember CLI Materialize, right? But I do send out a lot of Tomsters to the community, so that's sort of my contribution.
I know you're sending it out at EmberConf, and you gave me some, especially that London. I don't know who gave me the London Ember Tomster. Meetup. Yeah, and London Tomster. I don't know what it is, but it has a little funny black hat on it. And it's pretty good. And that's on one of my laptops. So, and I never used to put stickers on my laptops, but now all my laptops have Ember stickers.
Yeah.
So that's all because of you.
Oh, thanks. That's great. That's awesome to know. But, you know, again, I think for most people, it's, you know, you can contribute to documentation, right? Like, if you're learning and you find that some piece is missing, for example, for Ember CLI Materialize, I was messing around with it the other day, and the icons were, I couldn't reference the icons because Materialize CSS is broken, you know, so updating the docs to say like, okay, this is where you can actually find the real icons that actually do work, you know, can be a pain. But if you do something that simple, which again, it's just, you know, editing an HBS file, it's not ridiculously crazy or anything, but it's really, really, really helpful.
Yeah, it's not hard to do from a technical point of view. Everybody knows how to edit. Most people that are looking into programming definitely know how to edit a file, and mostly it's just text. And it's incorrect information that you're correcting, or it could be markdown, which is a text format that gets translated into HTML. That's what GitHub uses. And that's when you can, for example, update the README or the guides. All that is not hard to do from a technical point of view, but from the point of view of a new developer, they might think, well, I don't know if the changes that I'm trying to make are because I'm ignorant, I don't know, or because that's a real problem. That's where they need some kind of mentorship. And in the world of GitHub, we have these things called pull requests. So what you can do as a new developer is, if you think that there is a mistake in documentation, you can go ahead and fix it, then send a pull request to the maintainer. And if it's incorrect, they'll tell you it's incorrect and they won't accept it. And if we keep doing it, eventually we'll end up, you know, having a lot of contributions. But my question to you is, as a new developer, you already have tons of things to do. I mean, in your case, you have a lot more other, you know, a lot of other things to do. You're running a company, you have a consulting practice, and you're trying to learn. Where is the time to contribute?
Where is the time to contribute?
And what's motivating you to do it? You know what I'm saying? What I'm trying to get to is, obviously you can make time for anything that you want to do. Mm-hmm. But what's your motivation? I understand it's kind of a good thing to do, but really, right. Why?
Well, I'm not really sure. I mean, it's just exciting. One thing about development that I think it's like playing a game, right? I love building things. So in general, I typically find myself wanting to create something, right? It's not just about doing one thing, but like, what else can we do with this? That's why I like development, because I could, you know, I can set up a project. I worked with my friend the other day on a little open source project where we took a MIDI keyboard and we connected it up with a Pong game, like just, you know, a Pong game in JavaScript. And then he connected a Node.js back into it, and, you know, you could actually use the MIDI keyboard controls to control the Pong game, which was really cool. So, you know, those things just excite me. But I think the other thing, as a business person, never learning how to code before and working with, you know, a few different CTOs, right, and developers, is I just wanted to do this for fun, right? Just learn how to code for fun. I thought, okay, it'll be a month thing and then I'll get over it. But once you understand what it means to code, what it means to be a developer, how developers think, like how they work, why they work the way they do, it's extremely eye-opening. And I tell all my business friends now, you know, if you just spend a month learning how to code, your business skills are going to get better, and you're going to be able to work with developers much better than you already do. I'm sure as a developer, you yourself have worked with that, you know, business person who wants to stack meetings upon meetings on you, or they interrupt you every 15 minutes, right?
Yeah. That's what people do.
Yep. And, you know, I used to be that way too, but now that I know what it takes to build something, I have a completely different perspective, and I really respect, I respect the differences between business people and tech people much more.
That's good to know. Well, so anybody who's listening, who is a business person and is looking to hire new developers, if you're listening, one advice from Tracy and myself is, let developers be. Let them be. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. they need to get in the zone. They need uninterrupted time. That's another problem that I see in a lot of shops, where in the interest of collaboration, they have everybody working in a very tight space. And so mm-hmm. you can hear everybody talk and stuff, and it's just distracting. And sometimes when you're working on a hard problem, you really want undistracted, dedicated time to yourself. That's why a lot of people start using headphones. But I think that you'll find that when people work at home, when they can have their own office, they can close the door, and they can concentrate, they're more productive. So that's another thing. I'm not going to say anything against Yahoo, but I want to, because you know, they recently banned remote work. As far as my understanding is that they're not allowing people to work remotely. Yahoo, you got it backwards. But, you know, nobody at Yahoo is listening to this, so we're fine. So you don't have a job as a software engineer. You do not plan on getting a job. Mm-hmm. Yet That's you fair. Are spending hours and hours listening to videos and spending countless hours, really, that you could be doing other things. You could be spending time with family. You mm-hmm. could be, you know, doing other casual things, or you could be working on activities that will make you money, right. Doing networking and other sales marketing things. So I don't want to repeat this question over and over. I know I've asked this, but But I really want to get to the bottom of this, because there could be other people like you, and I want mm-hmm. I want them to be inspired. So I want to know why. You know, one thing, there's one thing to say, well, you know, I don't make any money right now. I just want to learn the skill because it's fun and I enjoy it. That's good. But there should be an end game, right? In my mind, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, I want to spend 20 hours a week doing some things. After 1 year, I should get something out of it.
Right. Well, so for me, I get to be empowered. So I don't really have to sit there and wait for a developer to do something anymore, right? I can just, you know, like, okay, for example, with DishCrawl, my business, we send out this email newsletter and it's still broken, but there's a button that says see detail. Okay. It should say see details. But we have so much on our, you know, so much backlog of development stuff to do. We're just never getting to it, right? And it's been bothering me for about 2 years now. Now, it's one silly little small change. I can just, you know, log into GitHub, create a branch, and somebody will merge it into master for me. Done, right? Or, you know, I started this new company and my co-founder was working on the backend stuff. And I really, as a business person, I just, you know, I'm not useful unless I'm selling something, right? I'm just sitting there waiting for development. Now I basically just did the front end by myself and I created a website or landing pages. It, you know, anything like that, I can do myself now. So it's extremely empowering and it helps me in business.
That's amazing. That's incredible. So hats off to you, because it's exactly the right approach. You're fearless now, right? You have tamed this monster. And this thing that intimidates people, you know, what is this program? What is this code thing? And what is GitHub? That's mm-hmm. not the hard stuff. And at least the low-hanging fruit, you can start to do it. And even if you can't do it, you will probably be able to delegate it more intelligently now.
Exactly.
So have you had any experience working as, now I know that you don't work as a developer for another company, mm-hmm. but in any kind of environment, you might have seen people, new developers, you might have come across, maybe you've hired people. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the way new developers are brought in, and mm-hmm. what is their experience? Do you have any insight on that?
So I've seen a lot of my friends make hires. Actually, one of my friends was about to make a hire after I learned how to code, and I freaked out because he was going to make the most horrifying decision in the whole entire world, right? So I think business people, they don't know how else to hire developers, right? They're like, okay, this person's easy to get along with. And that is in no way a metric for hiring a developer, right? Like, look at their code, see what their contributions on GitHub are. Do they have expertise in what they're saying, right? And I think as new developers, you know, if you are constantly contributing to your GitHub profile and showing progress over a certain amount of time, and a, you know, an engineer or your engineering manager who is hiring you can go and look at your code, it's much more interesting and you're much more hireable than somebody who is just a black box.
Let us know how we are doing by tweeting at us at Mentoring Devs. And if you are enjoying the show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Now, let's get back to the show.
That's good. I think if you have the ability as a new developer, if you have the ability to create projects, your own projects, perhaps contribute in other projects, and have some proof that you have the technical ability, that's always very good. And I've heard from recruiters that even regular recruiters, they are going through this, hiring managers are looking at it across the board, different mm-hmm. technologies. But my concern is for those developers, and I'd say the majority of developers have not been able to do it for various reasons. Some of it is because they have done some work, but their work is not open source, which is, I'd say, 90% or more. Most overwhelming amount of development happens behind closed doors. You can't really legally share the code. So that's not a possibility for them. And then after hours, nights and weekends, they can work on something. Mm-hmm. But again, most people don't because, they have obligations and other things. So what happens to those people if all we do is look at GitHub, commits?
I don't think most business people look at that, but I think sharing works, right? As a developer, I think the beautiful thing about development is you create something and you find a really smart way to do something, right? And then that knowledge never goes away. So if you have files of, a way you set up a project, let's say, or how you set up a CD pipeline or, something like that, and you're able to show and talk intelligently about it, then that's more awesome. So Doug Crockford, I just saw him speak at this thing called CodeCamp, and he said that to hire developers, what he actually does is he'll pull up code and sort of read through code for the interview process. And it's really about how a developer communicates that code, how he takes feedback, and then that's how he makes hiring decisions. And I agree with that.
No, that's really smart because because I know that when I read my own code, I have a language. I have my own language that I've come up with that helps me to visualize what I'm doing.
Right.
And I can actually speak my code. I can do that because that's kind of how, and no matter which programming language I use, I have this own personal language that I use. If I don't do that, I'll go crazy. I can't function with just keep typing with my mouth shut. I just kind of have this monologue going in my head. So I think that's smart from Douglas. And if he's hiring for somebody, he's probably hiring for a very senior position with very specific requirements. He probably, somebody's already vetted the guy. They know that he's good. They just want to know if he can communicate, if he, what he thinks like. So I think that's completely fair, especially at Yahoo and big Silicon Valley companies. And I think they have a very high bar for new developers and experienced developers, especially in Silicon Valley, the bar is pretty high, but there's life outside of Silicon Valley. I used to live in San Jose. Yeah, I used to live in San Jose. I used to live in the Bay Area and it's just a different world. It's not like anything else. Even if you go to other places, in the East Coast, like New York or DC, it's not Silicon Valley. And there's just a lot fewer number of qualified candidates. So I think that the Silicon Valley has the ability. Now, obviously, I just said it, and I already know that there are, people constantly leave jobs for better jobs. I think once you are at a certain level, once you're really good and you've proven yourself in one position, it's very easy to go from the first position to the second to the third. That's actually true all over the world, but especially in Silicon Valley because there are so many new companies coming up. But when you're new, when you don't have a GitHub profile, when you don't really have anything to show, but maybe you have talent, maybe you have passion, maybe you have drive, Silicon Valley is a tough place to make it. You could, if somebody wanted my advice, I'd say don't go to Silicon Valley if you don't have, braggable things, right? Go somewhere else where you can get the experience and then go to Silicon Valley if you need to. That would be my suggestion. Have you lived anywhere other than the Valley?
Actually, I grew up here. And
that's
when you start a business, when you start a business, you're stuck forever. So I've been stuck here for the past 7 years now. And it doesn't look like doesn't look like I'm going anywhere. So
it's a great place to be.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I think that learning from the best and having people around in the Silicon Valley, because the communities are so rich and there's so many meetups you can go to, you can meet so many people, is awesome. But I also think that hiring outside of the Silicon Valley is really great too, because there's smart people everywhere. You know, there's a great community in Boston. There's a great community in Austin, right? And so I think one of the mistakes that people make in the Silicon Valley is only trying to hire from this specific pool.
Yeah. So now you have some experience doing some development, mm-hmm. and you know a ton of people. Obviously, you're in the Bay Area, so every other person is a software developer.
It's true.
So how will you rate software development as a career for someone who is, like you, curious but mm-hmm. a little intimidated? Maybe he doesn't mm-hmm. have the connections that you do. How will you rate out of 1 to 10? How do you describe software development as a career choice?
So you have to want to learn all the time. So there's new things, there's new standards, you know, now, especially with, you know, ES 2015, 2016, 2017, et cetera, and their idea of releasing something every year, you know, there's always something new to learn, right? Right now, you know, whether you're on Ember, Angular, it's all about going from Ember 1 to Ember 2, you know, from Angular, it's Angular 1 to Angular 2. So, or React, you have React and Native, right? So if you're not the type of person who wants to continuously build and continuously further your education, it's definitely not going to be an amazing thing for you. But if it's something where you get excited about all the new exciting things and you get excited about tinkering with technology all the time and spending, you know, not just your 40 hours a week, but your free time doing the same thing, then it's a great job, and you can make extraordinary amounts of money doing it.
And that's true. Mm-hmm. That is true. But the extraordinary part, I'll caveat that by saying you need to be in the Bay Area if you want to make extraordinary amount of money.
Right. Or just be really, really, really good.
Well, right. Yeah, if you're really good and you've proven yourself, software development is a great career to be in, because I don't think that it is the highest paying career. Definitely mm-hmm. not. There are mm-hmm. professions where you get paid a lot more, mm-hmm. even, you know, compared to Silicon Valley salaries. And the reason that I would still recommend it is that it has a flexibility. It has flexibility of lifestyle, which you won't have if you were a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. You probably make more money, but you probably have to work certain hours. You probably have to dress a certain way. You probably have to kill yourself for that for that $1 million a year salary. But right. But in software development, I've seen, you know, people working in shorts and slippers, and it's like, I don't know if they woke up or they're just sleeping late. I don't know what's, are they coming or going? It's hard to tell in the valley, and it's just catching on everywhere you go. And then there are a whole lot of people who work remotely. Mm-hmm. And there's this opportunity to start a company, to start a consulting practice. There is just so much need for qualified, technical, and smart people who can communicate. There's just a huge need. And people are willing to work on your terms. Not only that, you don't need a computer science degree. You're a proof of that. And I think if you stick right. with it, if you stick with it, with Ember, just stick with Ember. Don't try to do too many crazy things. Mm-hmm. If you stick with Ember yourself in 1 year, I think you would be so good that you might want to consider getting a job.
Yeah. Well, as a junior developer, I'm still not getting paid as much as I'm getting paid right now. So I'm very, kind of the hard part, yeah. right? I have to be pretty damn good developer to make the money I'm making right now. But I also, you know, work a lot. So, you know, I wake up,
I have my business meetings at 8 a.m. and then I 9 o'clock at night, but I have a lifestyle that allows me to do that. And thankfully, you know, in relationships mostly, I find, I guess my past three relationships have been with developers. So, you know, they're always coding and I'm always working. It works out really well.
And it's not like you have any choice. It's hard to find a non-developer in San Jose.
And I think I get along with developers.
Oh, yes. Well,
that's sort of why, but yes. But
I said it and I realized, well, no, that's not true. They're also network engineers.
Yes, that's, I've dated those too.
Yeah. And I think that there is a 2-to-1 ratio of men to women in the valley.
Yes, they call it Man Jose.
Man Jose. Yeah, and it's pathetic. It's so sad. But that's another topic. So what do you think are the struggles? What are your struggles as a new developer, even though you're not completely committed to this, but you're really spending a lot of time. Are you struggling? What are your struggles?
So I'm pretty, like, I have a lot of people around me that are very, very willing to help, right? So I'm sort of a unique use case, I think. So I know where to ask for the right information, let's just say. But I think for new developers, when you go out there and you're watching videos or looking at Stack Overflow, there's a lot of bad information out there. So I was watching this beginning Ember video the other day of this guy, you know, setting up a project, et cetera. His videos are amazing. They're animated and everything. But, you know, he wasn't using Ember CLI, and the way he was doing it was just so horrific. I had to turn it off after 10 minutes. So things like that. Or, you know, I think the other thing is keeping up to date, right? I mean, I was watching videos of Eric Brin talking, and you know, a year ago, Ember CLI was so drastically different and so beta, or alpha actually, than it is today. Yeah. And so really realizing that, I think, is difficult, right? Like, as a new developer, if you're not in the know and you're not staying up to date on the best of the best, then it's really hard to distinguish, like, okay, Ember CLI looks really, really alpha, but that video was from a year ago, you know?
Yeah, so always when you do a search on Google, what I do is I use the search tools and I just generally, I filter the results and I only want to get the last 1 year's of hits, because if it's a year older than a year, then I don't know. I don't know if it's any, if it's any good. But really, this is a challenge, because how would you know, for example, if you didn't have a lot of people telling you, and close friends and so on, telling you that this is what Ember CLI is, how would you know? You just type it in, you find something, and it's completely wrong. It wasn't wrong 2 years ago, but it's completely wrong now.
And
so I think that this is a problem that we all have. That's why I think this mentorship, this ethos of mentoring developers, it's so important. It's so essential. And if you really care about, you know, helping new developers, if you really care about, you know, having this culture of feel good culture of nurturing people and, hey, come on and let's code. If you want to really have that, then you need to also have mentorship. And that's where I think that you are lucky, you were able to get good mentors. And I think that all of us should reach out. People who have even a year of experience should reach out to people who have less experience and say, can I help you? Do you need any, do you need a hand? You know, I know you have questions, because I did when I was at your stage. So that's kind of what I think this podcast is about, to reach out to people and say, I know that you're probably unsure. I know you're probably struggling. I know that you're probably thinking, you know, maybe you're not cut out for this, but I want you to know that we've all been there. And so, so don't give up. And you know, it's not for everybody. Certainly, I'm not saying that software development is for every single person on earth. Not, mm-hmm. certainly not, but it's for a lot of people, and a lot of people that are struggling right now, or maybe they're going down the wrong path, like you said. They're learning the wrong things, and it's not really wrong in the sense of right and wrong the way, you know, it's not like morally wrong, but it's wrong because you could be doing something better in 2015. Yes. This is not how you should, for example, you know, table-based layouts. If you learn that, sure, you can make it work, but you should not be learning that in 2015. So it was right in 1999. It's wrong in 2015.
Right.
That type of stuff. So
yeah, I think also watching, and there's so much video out there these days, that watching the big conferences is really helpful, right? So I actually went back and watched all the you know, because EmberConf, I would say I probably understood 25% of what was going on. I went back and watched all the videos, and you know, I really enjoyed them because now I understand. And wow, this is really cool. Like Eric Brin giving the talk about being able to add CSS to your components, right? I thought that was awesome. Or watching Liquid Fire was really cool too. So it's really just going back and rewatching things. And one thing that also really helps me is I'll watch a video and then I'll use the technology. So I'll build something right away. And if you're not contributing to other people's open source projects, it's really easy to just use GitHub Pages, publish a silly little thing you made, right, to show progress. And so I blogged about my first 14 days.
Yeah, like you did.
Slash coding classes.
Do you have is that a regular blog that you just to GitHub? You have GitHub Pages and you just documented your first 14 days?
Yeah.
But I wanted to know is that something that you do all the time, or is it just a one-time thing you did and you're done?
That was just a one-time thing. I think I have too much going on. to do that regularly.
So tell me about it. What was your experience like? I mean, it took some effort. Was it hard to do?
Was it hard to do what?
Well, I think that it's bittersweet, you know, learning how to code is frustrating, but it's rewarding. We understand that. But I wanted to know about your experience creating that blog on GitHub Pages, mm-hmm. and doing those posts. Was it hard to do? Did you find that easy? Was it just comfortable?
Oh, it's very easy to set up. I mean, you know, all you do is press a few buttons. I'm sure there's documentation somewhere on how to set up GitHub Pages, but you literally press a button and then you clone it in your, you know, on your thing. I stuck it into Sublime, I edited it, and then I pushed it to GitHub, and then my site was live. So it's a few more steps, but it's nothing that somebody can't do in an hour or less.
So I can hear somebody, you know, some mm-hmm. of our audience thinking, sure, I can create a GitHub Pages website and I can blog and I can write about my experiences, mm-hmm. but who's going to read it? Who cares? How did you make people care?
Well, I don't know. I don't think anybody really cares. I was actually surprised. I went to Wicked Good Ember and somebody was like, oh yeah, I've been following your coding journey. And I'm thinking, really? Why? But I did it for myself. I think it's good for yourself. It's not for anybody else. It's just about understanding where your progress has been. So the first day I learned how to code, I made 4 websites. and it was really stupid. I just learned a bunch of CSS animations. So I was really excited that I could have like Tomster spinning in different places, honestly. And then, you know, day 2, I sort of started learning a little bit more. I was still in just HTML, CSS. Then I learned Bootstrap on day 3. You know, then I learned what JSBin was. So it's also about, I think, like remembering what tools you can use, right? Oh, I think also using things like JSBin are so good and crucial because, you know, you can bang your head on you know, doing it in a Sublime text, let's say, with JS spending out see immediately and then stick it into your code. Yeah. So I thought that was a really big one as well for me.
JS Bin is pretty good. Also, there are alternatives. There's one website called JS Fiddle. There's also CodePen.io. Right. All of them are good choices. I wanted to ask you, we are getting towards the end of our interview. And I wanted to ask you, tell me honestly, how much do you suffer from imposter syndrome?
I think everybody does, you know, I mean, from a development community perspective, I remember going to meetups and thinking like, what am I doing here again? Whatever. I'm just having fun, whatever. It's fine. Right. But, you know, seeing that community members really appreciated what I added, even if it wasn't, you know, contributing to tons of open source was really awesome. And then even the silly little things that I've learned and how new I still feel like I am, hearing my friends say, like, you know, for somebody just starting out, you come really, really, really far compared to a lot of people I know. So that's helpful. But I think still, you know, I think everybody always thinks they're not good enough, right?
Yeah. But
whatever. That's life.
In programming, in software development, I shouldn't say programming because software development as an art, as a form of art or a piece of engineering is a lot more than just programming. But in software development, there's just so much to learn. And there are only very, very few people in the world that have any kind of sizable knowledge, really practical, deep down knowledge about even half of what we need to know. And most people just, they don't let on. And I think it comes from confidence. Like you have the confidence to know that the things that you don't know are not that hard. You have done similar things before. And when it comes down to it, if you have to, you will do X, Y, and Z, and you will get that knowledge. No big deal. That's the difference between somebody who appears confident and appears to have it together and somebody who is, you know, running around like a headless chicken, which, you know, I have been in both places, so I can talk about this, but I think that if you're out there and if you feel like an imposter, like you don't belong, you know, and you should know that it will pass. And then you will feel very confident. And then after a while, you're doing something else that you don't know anything about. You feel like an imposter again. And so this cycle will continue, and accept it because that's your life from now on.
Yeah. I think that's something that you just need to get comfortable with, right? And once you are comfortable with that sort of, I'm new. Okay, I'm better. I'm new. Okay, I'm better. Then you're going to be much better along in life, right? People who sort of get comfortable, I think, with one thing, which is fine as well, sort of stifle their learning, you know? And I think that's really hard, especially in the world of development. You have to really absorb and be okay with learning new things and being a beginner over and over again.
Do you think it's important for new developers to promote themselves?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean,
well, maybe you
might
shy.
As well.
Maybe you're okay. So let me tell you a little bit about developers.
Yes,
software developers are introverts. That's why.
Right.
So that's.
But I think blogging, you know, blogging is sort of a safe way, right? I mean, most developers who are amazing, it's not because they're out there selling themselves. It's because they create really amazing. You know, they write really amazing lines of code, you know, and people really respect that. I think it's the same thing. You know, if you blog and you have really interesting technical things to say or whatever, you just put yourself out there, you know, one day you'll be somebody, maybe.
Yeah. And
it'll help you in your job search.
Absolutely. And I think that's what you need to focus on as a new developer. If you're listening, think about it this way. when you're out looking for a new opportunity, perhaps you're looking for a job, perhaps you're looking to move up in your current job, or perhaps you're looking to start a business, at any of these steps, when you start, when you go in a new direction, people are going to look you up. They're going to go to Google, they go to GitHub, wherever mm-hmm. people go, LinkedIn, they will look you up and see, okay, so who are you? What are you about? And if you have a lot of content out there, you have blog posts, maybe you've appeared on the Mentoring Developers podcast, and maybe you have a good LinkedIn profile, all of that is going to create a persona in their mind. And then mm-hmm. that's how you're going to be treated. If you are a good developer, if you're passionate, but nobody knows about it, they're going to assume you're not passionate. They're going to assume you're not that good. So, right. So you owe it to yourself to leave these breadcrumbs for people to find when you really need them to find it.
And if I can add one more thing is you're always better than somebody. So you're also helping people who don't know, have any idea what they're doing. Right. So if you continue doing that, even over the course of a year, you'd be surprised how many people you actually are helping, because people from day one know less than you.
Absolutely. You can always help others. You can also help yourself, your future self. 3 or 4 months down the road, you're probably going to forget what you know now. So help yourself by writing it down in a blog post. And I want to end with some questions about mentorship. I want to know your opinion, and let's have some quick answers. Mm-hmm. Mentorship. I know that mm-hmm. you have had informal mentors. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's better like that? Or do you think a formal mentorship program with a curriculum, with you know, more regimented mentorship, is that better?
I think both are important. So if you can get formal mentorship, amazing. But just having friends in the community and giving back and, you know, taking what you need, I think is really important as well. So.
And let me ask you about how you learn, how you grow your knowledge. So tell me if you listen to any podcasts, if you watch any screencasts, or if mm-hmm. you read any blogs.
Yeah, so I actually, you know, I mean, Ember Weekend is awesome because it has great content, but I mostly watch a bunch of YouTube videos, and those are really... I sort of treat those as my podcast when I'm not looking at the screen. For me, I'm a visual learner, so I think it's important when you're learning as well to understand how do you consume things, right? Like, one thing I've gotten really excited about lately is, have you seen that live coding thing that's been happening? So people will post the fact that they're coding and you can go watch them. So last night I fell asleep to somebody watching somebody live code, which was awesome. He was just editing documentation, but it was awesome.
That is incredible. That's dedication right there. It's just, you are destined to make it big, Tracy.
It's ridiculous, but it's awesome. Yes.
So do you have any advice for new and aspiring developers?
I would just say, don't give up. Contribute to the community in any way you can, and really understand the value of open source and the communities that are built around it. I think sharing is really important, right? If you put your code out there and post it on GitHub, more people can help. So I just got some help recently with regards to, like, you know, having utils files in an Ember app, right? And trying to understand that a little bit better. But if I hadn't posted that on GitHub and, you know, made it open for the world to see, nobody would have been able to help me.
That's right. And I think that all of us have benefited from your answers and your insights into how to get into software development. Maybe you're curious, maybe you're trying things out. And I hope that our listeners will comment and leave reviews so we know how they feel about this interview. Before we close, I want to give you the opportunity to promote your stuff. I know that you are doing a whole bunch of stuff, so let us know where we can find you, and let us know what are all the wonderful things you're doing, and we'll make sure that we have all of the links on the website so they can go to mentoringdevelopers.com to get the show notes, but take it away.
I think one thing that's really helpful for new developers is, and even experienced developers, is modern web UI. So we have great videos on YouTube. There's a lot of really useful content there. And we really filter our content to have only the best of the best to speak about next generation technologies. So it's always cutting edge, and for anyone in the development world, really relevant. You can find me on Twitter, GitHub, or Instagram at Lady Leet. So it's LadyLeet. Or you can email me at tracy@modern-web.org.
All right. And you have this GitHub pages that mm-hmm. we're going to put in our show notes. And anything else you can think of in the meantime before we publish. So, Tracy, it was a pleasure talking to you today, and hope that we'll have you back in a couple of months after you've released, you know, your open source project, and we can discuss it.
Well, I released one of them.
Oh, you so did?
It's on there already. Yes.
Okay.
My silly open source projects, yes.
That's incredible. We have to have more details about this, and we have to have you back so we can talk about it and have, you know, have all of our audience just be inspired to do five different things and and kill them.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if anybody needs help with anything, I mean, I'm always there to help. So please reach out and let me know what I can do to help.
All right, Tracy. Well, see you later.
All right. See you later.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.